We would like to acknowledge that the land on which CITR operates and broadcast, and where many of you are listening to the program from, is the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hello and welcome to That Song from That Movie. I'm Movie Maverick Mike.
And I'm Logan the Extra, and you're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio. Today we're going to be discussing Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, featured in Star Trek and Star Trek Beyond.
It's hard to believe that a cheesy, cancelled 60 sci-fi series, Star Trek, has survived so many media iterations, including the current morphing, seemingly never-ending TV series that are streaming for a small fee on Paramount and other areas. But we want to focus on two movies. The cleverly named Star Trek reboot from 2009, featuring Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto, and the second sequel, Star Trek Beyond, from 2016, because both featured 20th century hip-hop song Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. You're listening to Movie Maverick Mike and Logan the Extra on CITR 101.9 UBC Vancouver. So, Logan, what do you think about this song?
I think it's pretty hard to listen to without getting a bit pumped up, you know. I kind of feel my feet tapping, sometimes my head banging if I'm alone whenever I hear this song. I mean, it's got so much energy in it, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hip-hop song. I mean, when we discussed which movies to use and which songs to get into here, this is not my favorite song, to be honest. I'm not a big Beastie Boys fan.
I can't say I'm a huge Beastie Boys fan either, but I think this song stands above the rest in that it's like, it transcends their band. Is that too bad to say? You know, a lot of their songs are kind of oddball and they're kind of wacky, but this one, I mean, I guess it's a bit of an oddball, but it's a really good rock song, and it's got, you know, everything you need to be a classic, I think.
Sure, yeah, sure. Let's assume that. But so let's talk about the song and then get into the movies a little bit, because this song had several lives. It started off as, you know, on the radio back in, when was it I said it was? 1994, I think it was, or something came out. And have you ever seen the video for it?
No.
Yeah, so the video became a hit. It's a homage to cheesy 70s cop shows. So you have the members of the band wearing wigs, big handlebar mustaches. They've got donuts. They're always jumping over a car. They're roughing up a suspect. It's meant to look like the 70s Starsky and Hutch, the shows like that that were before the band's time. But, you know, it has that look to it. And that video was a hit, and I think they both made a hit of each other.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
One fan we know for sure of the Beastie Boys was director J.J. Abrams, who said he was a big fan and was trying to jam this movie into, or song into this movie. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the first time we hear it is during the first Star Trek movie.
Wait?
Well, not the first, the one that's named Star Trek.
The first reboot. How many reboots are they going to be? We don't know, but yes.
Yeah, and but it's in the first one of the reboots, and it's not really that important of a scene, I wouldn't say. It's young Kirk steals his uncle's car, and he's taking a joyride with it for no good reason. The car is still what we think of as a car, not like a hover future car. But he's driving down the road.
In Iowa. Captain Kirk is from Iowa, yeah.
When the vocals come in with kind of a yell, the young actor for Captain Kirk, he yells as well. So it actually fits in quite well in that way.
Yeah, but I think this is important. It sets up, so I don't like the song, but I understand what they're trying to do in this scene. They're trying to show him as a young kid stealing a car. He's rebellious. He's listened to forbidden rock music from 300 years ago. We'll come back to that. And he's doing dangerous, rebellious things, right?
Yeah, but it felt a bit like we were trying to make up a backstory for a really beloved character. I mean, I didn't grow up when Star Trek was on air, but my father introduced it to me, and you have this character of Captain Kirk, and that show doesn't have much of a backstory. Whereas in this one, I felt like they felt forced to explain some of the reasons that he's.
Yeah, but there's room for lots of backstory. You could have had him with horses. You could have had him, you know, shaving his cat or something like that. I mean, there's any kind of awful or cool character moments they could have had for him that would have added to the character of Captain Kirk.
I guess, but this one was kind of selling him as, like, it felt a bit more like Chris Pine and Captain Kirk at times. You know,
This is how Chris Pine became Captain Kirk.
Yeah, is that what it was? Exactly. He's a bad boy. He's rebellious. His uncle is mean to him. His father's dead. And, you know, it's like, okay, we got to explain why he's willing to make these daring moves. But, I mean, in the original TV series, he just did. And I thought, you know, that was a great part of his character.
You know, that's interesting. This is a complete tangent, but that reminds me of Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is a favorite movie of mine. Maybe we'll talk about that in a future episode. But there's a infamous part of the original Raiders of the Lost Ark where, Han Solo, where Indiana Jones says, snakes, why'd it have to be snakes? And then they had a prequel with River Phoenix, a flashback, where we explain why he's afraid of snakes. I'm like, I didn't need to know that. So maybe that's what you're thinking. We didn't have to explain every aspect of adult Captain Kirk's character. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, It's, I don't think every character aspect has to have a tragic backstory. And also later in this film, they kind of do that with McCoy, whereas they set up, he says, something along the lines of, my wife took the whole planet in the divorce. All she left me with was my bones, which is a great line.
That was cute. Yeah, it was cute.
But
yeah.
At the same time, it's like, other than Spock, because of, I guess, his Vulcan heritage, it's not like characters are that way because of some traumatic past story. They just are that way.
Well,
I think,
but
that's accurate to life.
No, I'm seeing that. So that's a good contrast with young Spock, where he grows up on Vulcan and he's bullied. So here we see young Kirk as a child living his best life, driving this 300-year-old car. And that's a good contrast to the past life of young Spock, I would guess. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They kind of put them in side by side in the movie. But yeah, I mean, they played this song just to have it be like a really rebellious and rocking song, which it is. And, you know, it fills its purpose. And it's kind of a cool scene to see him driving down the road if you ignore the fact that it's a Star Trek movie.
Well, I thought they were lucky that in the future, our future, you can still have these open fields in Iowa, so you don't have to have these expensive cityscapes and a bunch of futuristic vehicles, right?
Yeah, again, this whole scene takes you out of the, you know, 350 or however
big gap, yeah,
years in the future it is, because it's a young boy stealing a regular car, like you said, a 300-year-old car, I guess, listening to a 300-year-old song, driving down 300-year-old roads, you know, and it's all, you know, wide fields. It's not like a lot of other science fictions, especially like a utopian science fiction that Star Trek kind of is.
Maybe for some people, it's a foreign planet to see a bunch of empty fields and no, you know, emptiness for miles. So
maybe it helps because the rest of the movie is all surrounded by, you know, chrome, gleaming chrome
indoor
and titanium
sets,
and stuff
yeah.
like that. Yeah, it helps to break out into the country.
So as an added bonus, this to that song from that movie, this song, Sabotage, also plays in the next Star Trek.
Well, actually, two Star Treks later.
Right.
So they had Star Trek Into Darkness was the sequel to the Star Trek, the first reboot movie. And they've all done pretty well. I guess we haven't talked much about that.
The box office went down after the first one, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, so that one, the second reboot, didn't have Sabotage. And I don't think it's worse off for it, but, you know, it didn't. So we'll skim over that one and talk about the third one, Star Trek Beyond, which did include this in a pretty pivotal scene, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, you know, again, you and I may have a different version of pivotal, because in not to get too deep into visualizing it, but what is it? The Enterprise is trying to escape some bad guys, some alien force or something like that.
Well,
and they have to have some noise to jam the signal.
So I can talk to this a bit, which is that I don't think it's actually the Enterprise. I believe they use a ship that was abandoned on a planet that the Enterprise crashed on. They
right.
have to use this other ship. And they're coming back to this one Federation starbase that I think we've seen throughout the three movies. It's kind of just a utopian-looking place. It's where they got trained and stuff like that. And there's these drones coming to attack the place.
The space station, yeah.
Yeah, the space station. And so we can't take them all. They already defeated the Enterprise, like at the start of the film. So we had to find out a clever way to defeat them. And what they did was they said, basically, if you play music loud enough, it'll distract them and make them crash into each other. And there's more. They threw out some more scientific technical jargon, but I mean, I'm pretty sure the producers didn't think of the whole the specific wavelengths of what you need to do to accomplish this, you know?
So, and then I remember in Star Trek Beyond, Chris Pine as Captain Kirk says, I know just the song to play or just the moment to jam in there. So to me, it makes it sound like he was actively listening to Sabotage in the first movie.
Yeah. In the first movie, he kind of cues it up on the radio. But in this one, we heard a couple what they refer to as classic songs, because of course it'll be 300 years in the past for them that the Beastie Boys wrote this song. But this one, it gets selected by someone else, actually. I forget the exact machinations. I think Kirk played it for this one alien woman, and because she's the one who selects it as the song to be played to disrupt them. I know it's.
I don't recollect like that. Yeah.
What it basically is that the director said, "I want to play Sabotage again," and you know.
Yeah, I love this song. So.
Well, maybe let's give him a bit of credit. Maybe this the idea arose of the whole drone, and we can throw them off with sound, but. For sure, it was handpicked by the director to be this song that accompanies all the exploding ships, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, I think that's why we picked this song from this movie, because it reflects that a creative force behind Star Trek loves this song. I do not. And he's like, how can I jam this into the plot or the story of this movie?
You know, now that I think about it, it's a really indulgent scene as a whole. So we've got, you know, the director handpicks this song to throw in. The visuals are nice. I mean, everything's blowing up in this kind of cascade, but it gets a bit silly when the drones like form a wave, and you see the Enterprise like surfing this wave, and it's like, okay, you know they're having fun with it, which is good, and it comes across well in the movie, I think, but it's not terribly sophisticated.
So, what was that term you said that was when somebody can hear the song and the audience hears the song, and the difference is there?
Diegetic. I believe something's diegetic, especially of songs, when the characters are listening to it. So, for example, you could have someone's theme play, and you know, the characters, they don't know what's playing. It's just that they're doing something on the screen. But if it's diegetic, that song is like playing within the movie. So a good example would be the Cantina Band in Star Wars. So that song would be considered diegetic.
All the characters in the movie are listening to this song.
Yeah. Whereas something like the main theme from Star Wars wouldn't be diegetic. We hear it, but it's not like the characters hear it.
And what was the other version then? What's the other term called if it's only the audience who hears it, but the characters don't then?
I don't know. Not diegetic.
So if there's any music majors or sound engineers who want to write in and tell us what the right terms are, feel free to correct us for this aspect of it.
But yeah, for both of these scenes, the song is diegetic. They're listening to it. So it's kind of interesting. I like when movies use that to introduce a song. I mean, like, it's not under the... They don't disguise the fact that we're also listening to it. There's plenty of cuts to outside the ship where, as we all know, in space, no one can hear you sing. But yeah, it's fun to introduce a song that way, and I think it makes you feel a bit more for the characters and the emotion of the scene, but maybe that's just me.
Are you looking for ways to be a part of the community through low-stakes opportunities like volunteering? What about making friends that are really cool or have some common interests? Well, I'm here to tell you that at CITR, you can come volunteer at Volunteer Wednesdays, happening every other Wednesday from 12 to 3 with a really fun activity each time, like making signs or button making. Not only is it a great break from outside stress, but a great opportunity to be a part of the community. For more information, you can visit CITR's Instagram page at CITR and Discorder.
You're listening to That Song from That Movie on 101.9 FM CITR Radio with Logan the Extra and Movie Maverick Mike. Now, Mike, you said you had a problem with this song.
I'll tell you what my problem is. So I think in the context of the movie, this is a problem, quote-unquote problem, opportunity for Star Trek in general, for production design, for characterization, for quaint concepts like money and peace and happiness, is that it's 350 years in the future. So for our purposes, that song from that movie, if I said to you, Logan, hey, let's go, we're going to go fly a plane, we're going to go rob a bank or something, we're going to go do some exciting activity, we're going to go sky jumping. So here's a song that's going to pump this up. I got this one from 350 years ago. It's this great Beethoven. It's this great Mozart song. Like, it wouldn't resonate when you're that far back. Like you and I, if I played you a cool Beatles song from before my time in the 60s, that might be okay. Yeah, that's interesting, you know. But 350 years is a long way to pull back for music.
You know, it just shows how great Sabotage is, that it's living 300 years into the future. No, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, I think you could argue that if if one of us or both of us were really into classical music, or, you know, we listened to a lot of it, and we had a certain song that we really liked, maybe we could get pumped up from that music. But it's an odd choice to...
I appreciate classical music. There's a lot of pieces I like. I'm not an expert on it by any means. But I think it's almost like saying, you know, here's this song of this African tribe beating in a drum from the year 1212 or something like that. It's so far away as to be trivial. To assume that the musical tastes 350 years ago would tolerate this noisy shouting hip hop song it's asking a lot of the audience, I think.
I think they acknowledge that a bit in the plot. I mean, McCoy seems a bit stunned when it comes on in Star Trek Beyond, and he goes, "Is that classical music?" Kind of as a nod to the audience. This is 300 years old. But yeah, it's kind of, they kind of have to work around that fact, I think.
Yeah, and I guess you're right. If you believe that this song transcends time and taste, then yeah, it can last forever, so.
Yeah, any song can last forever if you like it enough, I guess.
and you've got the rights to it, and and Paramount is giving you the green light to resurrect their science fiction franchise.
Exactly, yeah.
For the best in funk, soul, surf, and more music, tune in to Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter at Jack Velvet Radio, Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Also available streaming and podcast at jackvelvet.net.
So, what do you think of this whole reboot idea?
So, you know, it's odd to me. I'm going to talk a little bit about Star Trek, so hopefully some of the people listening are Star Trek fans. To me, Star Trek has had 9 lives, and it's 6 or 7 too many, right? I mean, I often explain to people as an old guy that Star Trek was canceled in 1969, I want to say, 1967 to 1969. It ran 2 seasons, got sort of canceled, resurrected for a third. If you watch the shows in chronological order, or you watch them without rose-colored glasses, you realize it was kind of running its course by the end of the third season. So there's a reason why it was canceled outright. This wasn't a world-beating show like something current like The Simpsons, or I don't know, what's
Doctor
another?
Doctor Who or something?
Yeah, Doctor Who's kind of accepting. But yeah, it wasn't that this was going to last forever and, you know, we're going to, like, the next generation. So I think that was the origins of it. And then after the Gene Roddenberry, creator, producer, you know, chief writer for the show, said, let's resurrect it at the next generation, Star Trek fans were skeptical. But now, you see, here's the thing. It's become this cornucopia. Well, you don't get to use that word often.
That's your word of the day.
That's right. Yeah. Of shows that includes The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, which I like. Enterprise, which was kind of a disaster. It was a bit of a prequel. I don't think it was that bad. So then you have, what's that, 5 TV shows, right? TV series.
And more than that for movies.
Right? Yeah, so you have that. That's of different levels of quality, different levels of fandom, different levels of writing, yada, yada, yada. And then that's another technical term, by the way, yada, yada, yada. Cornucopia. And then what was the other word?
What was the word?
Juxta? Dietetic.
Diegetic, yes.
Yeah, okay, so it's a whole Webster's, you need your dictionary, we listen to our show. But then, and then you have the movies, right? So there was, I can't remember all that. There was First Contact, the original Star Trek movies with the original crew.
Yeah, Star Trek The Motion Picture is, I think, the first name.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, you got to get me carded.
I'll say a quick thing about that, is that I think it's cheesy. There's been a couple movies that they'll just use the name because there's been some sort of title for the last one. Like, the first reboot is just called Star Trek. And that almost feels a bit disrespectful. It's like, no, you're not the first Star Trek movie. You don't get to hold that name.
No, I think it was trying to say reboot is what they're trying to say.
They're kind of cheating because the first one was, Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Yeah, and then Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan, which was a swashbuckling, you know, boys' adventure. Then there was The Search for Spock. Then The Voyage Home, which we're called the whale movie, The Final Frontier, The Undiscovered Country. Then we have the Next Generation class of movies with Generations, First Contact, Insurrection, Nemesis. I'm running through them quickly to illustrate how there's so many. it's hard to keep track of them. So there becomes the original series, four more series, five original movies, four new movies, three new movies with a new cast, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana. Yeah. Then we have the streaming shows, Star Trek
Discovery.
Star Trek New Worlds, the animated one, Below Decks, Star Trek The Profit Maker, I think it's called. No, I don't know what it is.
I know. It's hard to point to anything and say that is Star Trek because there's so much, other than maybe the original series could start it all. But, I mean, it's almost become this abstraction. You know, Star Trek, the only thing that's really, it's a space sci-fi, and that's about it. Sometimes it's the drama. These new movies were action thrillers.
Right.
They had some comedy to them. You know, sometimes it's kind of an adventure movie. Sometimes it's not.
Right. So the ethos has changed, which is fair when a franchise ages over 50, 60 years. So it used to be fairly cerebral. And it used to be the old Star Trek shows were moralistic. And then there were some puzzles and stuff like that. And then with the Star Trek that we're talking about with our song in it was, you know, boys' adventure and then adventure and action adventure. So they realized, okay, this is let's. And I think that started with that idea that let's lean into the action adventure part came with Star Trek First Contact. So they tried to keep their scientific trappings, but also get way into space. And J.J. Abrams definitely took it off the scale in terms of scientific plausibility with his movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, the part of the issue with 300 years in the future, and part of the thing that Roddenberry was trying to get into, I feel, Roddenberry was looking to get us beyond our petty human differences and current strife. But I think for my kids, I was worried that they would look at the Star Trek and think, okay, this is the near future. We're that close to faster than light drive, to transporters, to phasers. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the 70s, people were talking about, you know, how much the science is so far behind that. So the point I want to get to is that I feel part of the problem with some of these Hollywood ventures is that we're spending more money on movies about space exploration than we're actually spending in real life for space exploration. You know, I mean, you have to drop $200 million in a new Star Trek movie that's got some really cool effects. In the meantime, we're a couple centuries away from a transporter or even faster than light or even ion engines. So
I don't know. I'll have to check NASA's bill because they rack up quite a number too. But yeah, it is kind of funny that that these sci-fis are, you know, really futuristic. And then it's like, hey, wait, are we still working towards that right now? Like, is this supposed to be our future? Like a lot of shows, a lot of sci-fis, they're supposed to be a criticism of what we do now, but I don't think Star Trek is really.
No, like that's like you said, it was the opposite. It was optimistic. It was, we're going to get past the nuclear age, we're going to get past our war and differences, and we're going to, as one race, explore the galaxy, which is great. Great
yeah.
message. Yeah.
You know, hope and positivity are always great things, but you know, eventually you got to make it happen, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of drifted in terms of, you know, let's teach the audience a moralistic lesson about behavior, and that and we're kind of like, I want to see you fight some Klingons and fire phasers at the planet, kind of.
Yeah, that, you know, on one hand, you've got a moral about human nature that, you know, really heartwarming, makes us feel good, gives us hope for the future. And the other, you have a zero gravity fight between Kirk and Krall, and it's
and like, gone, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, which one are we picking? Well,
you know, I mean, ideally you would do both, right? I'm gonna fire the phasers at the dilithium crystals to carve the warp dive to do this thing so we can illustrate how we have to save this one entire planet or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that is something that's a bit lacking of some of the newer movies is that it's the villains are more generic and the heroes are more generic. But, I mean, I like the movies well enough, so I can't complain. It got me to buy a ticket.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
You've been listening to that song from that movie on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Movie Maverick Mike, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram.
I'm Logan the Extra, and you can find this episode and all of our episodes on CITR.ca. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you later.